Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula Gordon. Bill Russell is here. We're talking with Carl Safina, and we're talking about the oceans. We're talking about, actually, water creatures. We're talking about animals who live in the water. It really helped me that as you told stories, you talked about them as animals, and that you didn't just... It feels dismissive to me now to talk about them as just fish.
Well, then I did my job.
You did a good job, and you kept it very personal. Not only did the animals feel like wild animals, I also had a renewed sense of humans as hunter-gatherers, and I'm not too far from the corals. I'm not, Bill. I'm not. All of this started to feel real connected in ways that sometimes people feel pretty disconnected. Which brings us back to the corals. Aren't we looking at coral reefs as part of some pretty big challenges that we face on the planet? And some of them are keeping the corals alive?
Well, if you take all the different theories as to what is wrong with the corals, you would have to fix the climate change, which has to do with the way civilization uses energy. You would have to fix the amount of nutrients running in from the coastal areas, which has to do with the tremendous overpopulation of humans at this stage in history. You would have to stop using forests by clear-cutting them, because all of the silt running off the coastal forest and into the sea smothers the corals with silt that blocks the light, blocks the light and clogs their feeding mechanisms. It makes it impossible for corals to live. So, yes, do corals have something to do with a lot of other things that people do? They do.
Parts of this, I came away with two impressions. One is the old, I think you quote Pythagoras, man is the measure of all things. And a sense that the resources, the natural resources, all of them, minerals, animals, flora, fauna, are all here to serve man. And that it is not only appropriate, but it is our duty to fully exploit them. And also a sense of short-sighted economics. And both of those arguments are made fairly strongly by people who, at least some of whom, are, aggressively exploiting the resources, the natural resources that you're talking about.
These are the stories that you tell in your quite wonderful book called Song for the Blue Ocean. That is what Bill is referring to as.
That's my predicate.
Yes. That's your predicate. It was a long predicate, Bill.
It wasn't a subordinate clause.
No, nary one.
Well, whether or not you think that all other life is here to serve people, you might think that the best thing to do with other life is to use it for human purposes. And that's, you know, that's a valid point of view. But if we want to use it for human purposes, we can't keep using it up at the rate that we're using it up. We really have overshot the limits. And in many cases, this is not conjecture. We have collapsed fisheries that have thrown lots of people out of work. In the United States alone, overfishing, the depletion caused by overfishing costs $8 billion annually and 300,000 jobs. So you don't
just
have...
By having just taken too many fish out of the sea?
Because of what's not there that could be contributing to economic activity.
Those are big numbers.
Yes, it's major. There's nothing trivial about it.
And those are individual people in individual towns and villages all over America.
Right, whose future has been disrupted, whose lives have been disrupted, whose futures have been disrupted, whose children will leave their communities to go and look for work elsewhere. So you don't have to get into a big philosophical discussion about whether wildlife is here to serve people or not. We simply have overshot the limits, and a lot of people are suffering consequences as a result of that.
There's an assumption, I think, that you know, if we overuse these resources, I think a lot of people would a lot of us believe that you can turn to aquaculture, for example, as a reasonable substitute, assuming that our interest is in
that
food.
That was aquaculture, growing animals in. Yeah. Farms.
Well, you know, and both, you know, from a food standpoint, from a resource standpoint, that we can substitute wild animals, domesticated animals, farmed animals, for, and in fact, we still talk about harvesting in the seas, and that those people who've been displaced can go to work in the aquaculture industry, and everything will be fine.
Yeah, except that aquaculture, growing seafood in captive conditions, is a double-edged sword. it doesn't really take pressure off wild fish, because the animals that they're growing, whether they're salmon or shrimp or what have you, these are not cabbages. They don't grow on sunlight. They eat fish. And people still fish in the ocean in order to grind up fish to feed them. And that is a big inefficient step, rather than using what you caught directly to feed it to something else that you're growing is a big loss of energy. Another thing to consider is that there are only a few kinds of creatures that are amenable to growing in captive conditions. Not everything will grow there. You'll never grow swordfish in commercial quantities in artificial conditions. 100 years ago, we had food markets in the cities in this country that had buffalo and antelope and cranes and lots of different kinds of waterfowl and wildfowl and shorebirds and a lot of variety. And we drove all of that down to the point where it is not any longer commercially viable. So it is now separated from our lives. Right now, we still have a tremendous amount of variability and a lot of variety to choose from in seafood. We're on land down to about 4 different animals that make up all of our food choices. In the
cows,
chickens, pigs,
and lambs, sheep,
and maybe ducks
for the exotic eater.
Yeah. For the exotic, and that's pretty much the end of it. But right now we have probably 40 to 60 very commonly eaten different kinds of seafood just in this country, and hundreds around the world. It would be nice to keep that going, it seems to me. I mean, why lose it?
And we are threatening ourselves with losing it?
Yes, we are losing it in some cases. That's why fisheries have been closed in New England. That's why Newfoundland has 60% unemployment. Just like that, after the cod collapse and the government had to close the fishery and is spending $2 billion to keep those people on relief while they live out their depression at having lost their culture and way of life. I mean, these are we're not saying that if things continue, there are going to be problems. We're in many cases documenting or just reiterating problems that happened in this decade, earlier in this decade, and the warning signs in many other cases are clear. Another thing about growing fish and shrimp in artificial conditions is it produces a lot of pollution. You have to use what was once viable wild habitat that supported local people. In the tropics, all these shrimp that are being grown are grown at the expense of natural habitats, displacing local people who were fishing in mangrove areas and wetlands and shallow water bays. Those people are just shoved aside. People come in with a lot of money. They start these shrimp farms. They only need to hire a handful of people, patrol it with armed guards, and then when they take the shrimp out, they sell it for export to us, and the local people reap the hunger and malnutrition that results. So it's a pretty
sorry. There's a not
tale.
Very pretty picture.
It sounds like there's no free lunch.
No, there hasn't been for a long time.
This is Carl Safina. Bill Russell and I are talking with him about the condition of the world's oceans and how that affects all of us, not in the far distant future, but in the very real present. He's written quite an astonishing book called Song for the Blue Ocean. We're going to talk more about that when we come back with the Paula Gordon Show.